This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, let's start with tonight. Tonight we have some interesting, unusual, all these Gemaras are very unusual that we're doing at the moment, but that's part of the fun of the Daf Yomi process, is you get to see all the unusual things too. Can you imagine if the world only operated with two dimensions, not three? And if you had only two dimensions and you looked at a cylinder from the top, what would you see? A circle. You would see a circle. And what would you see if you looked at a cylinder from the front on? You would see a square or a rectangle. Wasn't off color. You're right, off now. TV addicts live in a two-dimensional world. So if you only had two dimensions, you would be unaware that a rectangle was in fact a cylinder. And imagine if you lived that way for years and years, you were born with two dimensions, and you saw the whole world with two dimensions, it would look somewhat different, isn't that so? Your experience of the world would be different. And then you're given a third dimension, all of a sudden, you're given a third dimension, what happens then? A circle becomes a cylinder, a rectangle becomes a cylinder, or everything starts changing, but the world looks completely different. So who says that there are only three dimensions? If the world would look so different if we had two dimensions instead of three, and the third dimension gives us a whole new perspective, what would happen if there was a fourth dimension? Or a fifth? Or a sixth? Well, the fact is, in Torah, there is a fourth dimension. What is the fourth dimension? Space is the three dimensions. Time. Right. Time is the fourth dimension. Where do we see examples of time being a fourth dimension in Halacha? Like what? Where is it a dimension? Where is it a dimension that defines reality? Shabbos would be a good example. You turn on you strike a match, and it's an act of striking a match. A millisecond later, you strike the same match, and it's a capital offense. What's changed? Same match, same matchbox, same person, same action. All that's changed is the time. And the time turns the act of striking a match into a Melech Shabbos. Time makes that difference. Shkia, the setting of the sun, makes that difference. So that's an example of time. Where's another example of where time is a dimension? Davening is, it's more a determinant. Well, I guess so. If you could daven at the wrong time, and it's not a shachris. You say the same words at a different time, and it's Kriya Shema. It's mitzvah of Kriya Shema. You say it 2 minutes later, it's nothing. It's just you're saying words from psukim from the Torah. So that would be another example. A good example is also a lulav and esrog. A lulav and esrog is worth how much the day before Sukkot? Lots. And the day after Sukkot? Nothing. What's the difference? It's the same lulav and esrog. Same dimensions. The three dimensions are the same. The fourth dimension is different. Different time. So in Torah, time is as important in defining reality as are the other three dimensions. It took the Western world how long to discover that? Till Einstein. It took them until the beginning of the 20th century. Until then, the Western world didn't recognize time as a dimension of reality. But that we don't finish there. We've got a fifth dimension too. What's the fifth dimension? Sorry? Morals? Well, almost. What else would it be?
Spiritual dimension.
As a manifest, that's similar to what you're saying, Moshe. A spiritual dimension, but more... Something that actually... Apart from the three dimensions and time, the time dimension, another dimension that determines reality. Intention. Right, so give it, where are examples of intention determining reality? Well, I'm going to come to the Beis Hamikdash. The Beis Hamikdash, there's a sixth dimension. Okay, but before we even get into the Beis Hamikdash, like, but that could be a condition as to whether the mitzvah needs kavona or it doesn't, but an example where everybody does. What happens if an apikoros writes a Sefer Torah? An apikoros, a man who doesn't believe in God, writes a Sefer Torah beautifully, perfectly, on parchment, with ink. He's a Jewish apikoros. He might even be a frum Jewish apikoros. Frum, he just doesn't believe in God. He does all the other stuff. Yeah, you can throw it in the garbage. it has no kedusha. So what gives the Sefer Torah its kedusha? The intention of the Sefer. So the intention will define reality. You can have two objects that to the eye look exactly the same. You can examine them both under the most powerful of microscopes, because a microscope will only measure three dimensions. And if you add your watch to it, or a calendar, you can measure a fourth dimension. But there's a fifth dimension that measures reality. And that's kavona, that's intention, direction, which has to be given to it by human intent. Human intent has the capacity to impact reality. And in the Beis Hamikdash, we have a sixth dimension, which is Tomei and Tahor. It's the sixth dimension. So you can have two things that look exactly the same, in the same place, same time. In the Beis Hamikdash, all of those other dimensions are very important. We have the three dimensions. The different parts of the Beis Hamikdash are defined by very clear, measurable criteria. Where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is, and where the Heichal is, and where the Ulam is, and where the Mizbeach is placed. That's all a very clear three-dimensional measurement system. And then we have time. Certain korbanos have to be brought at certain times. If they're brought at different times, they don't apply. We have the din of noisar. If things are left over too long, they can't be. It's an isser in itself. And then we have kavanah, such as pigul. You have the wrong intention. That messes up a korban. And in addition to that, you've got tomei and tahor, which can measure up a korban. So in Beis Hamikdash, we have a sixth dimension, which is tomei and tahor. Now, what we're going to look at is the application of some of those dimensions to energy. Isn't that an interesting idea? Where do we have energy in the Beis Hamikdash? Fire. We have not only objects defined by the three, but one of the important tools, one of the important implements of the Beis Hamikdash is Esh. We use Esh a lot. There's a lot of usage of fire. And the piece of Gemara we're going to learn tonight is about the status of fire, and particular angles of the status of fire. Now, we learned on Daf Mem He Amud Beis, if you want to look at that, those of you who've got a Gemara in front of you will see that inside. Have you got a Mem He Amud Beis? We have on this piece of Gemara is based on a verse in Vayikra, in the beginning of Vayikra, that says, Eish tomid tukad al hamizbeach. A permanent fire shall be set on the Mizbeach. Tonight I think we've got almost more women than we have men. It's quite amazing. I haven't referred to a place yet. So we've got a verse in Vayikra. Eish tomid tukad al Mizbeach. There is a permanent fire must be set on the Mizbeach. Lo tichbe. That's important. Lo tichbe. That fire may not be extinguished. And from that we learn that there's an isur, d'oraisa, there's a Torah prohibition on extinguishing the fire on the Mizbeach. So the fire on the Mizbeach burnt permanently. The Mizbeach was a fascinating place. It was a very large area with a ramp going up to it, and there were different fires going on it all the time, with different things going on all the time, used for, it was very, very complex as to what was happening, but a lot of activity on the Mizbeach all day. Things were going on the Mizbeach. And the Gemara says, if you look right in the middle of that Amud, Mem Hei Amud Beis, there's a little Aleph you might find in the square, and then it says, Eish Tomid Tukad Al HaMizbeach Lo Tichbe. Do you see that the Gemara quotes that verse from Vayikra? Eish Tomid Tukad Al HaMizbeach Lo Tichbe. And the Gemara says, Limeid Al Ma'aracha Shniya Shel Ketoret. This teaches us that the second stack of wood used for the fire, for the ketoret. So there were different stacks that were used for different, the more on the previous section goes into that, different stacks of wood used for different fires. There were different fires burning to do different things on. And the second one was used for the ketoret, the incense offering. Now you'll remember there were two types of incense offering. One was the daily one, and one was when? Yom Kippur only. Every day, how many times was there ketoret, an incense offering? Twice. They used to take the fire from the outer Mizbeach, the big Mizbeach, the one, the altar that I described to you was outside of the Heichal, outside of the Ulam, and there was a mizbeach pnimi, which was inside. There was an internal mizbeach, a smaller one, where the ketoret used to be brought. So they used to take coals from the burning embers from the big mizbeach and mix it with incense and bring that on the mizbeach hapnimi, on the small mizbeach inside. And on Yom Kippur, where was it? What did they used to do with it? What did the Kohen Gadol do on Yom Kippur? It took it right into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He didn't take it onto a mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Limed al ma'aroch ha'shnia shel ketoret. This teaches us about the second stack of firewood for the ketoret. Shelo tehe elo al ha'mizbeach ha'chitzon. That stack has to be placed on the outer mizbeach, and that's where the fire is made. Eish machto u'menoiro minayin. Where do we know from that the fire used for the Yom Kippur ketoret, which is called the Eish machto, because he used to take a kind of a pan, and he used to take a gold pan, we'll have a look at that in a little while, and get the coals into the pan, and then he used to mix the incense and take it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's called the Eish Machta. Where do we know from that the fire for the Machta and the menorah, the fire that was from which you lit the menorah, how was the menorah lit every day? Where did they take the fire from for the menorah? They didn't strike a new match. So when they took fire from for the menorah, that also came from the Mizbeach. So the Mizbeach was the source of all fire used. All fire used in the Beis HaMikdash came from the Mizbeach, from the outer Mizbeach, where the fire was kept going all the time. So where do we know from that those two fires also come from there? And the Gemara goes on to work that out. So what we see from here is the fire for the Yom Kippur Ketoret and the fire for the daily menorah were also taken from the outer Mizbeach. Now we have an interesting question on the next page. The last page of the fourth Perek, which is on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, and it starts Itmar, and it's about 8 lines from the top of the page. Itmar, we learnt. Hamechabe Eish Machta Umenor. What is the din of somebody who extinguishes the fire of the Machta or the Menorah? What about extinguishing the fire on the Mizbeach? What's the case? What happens to somebody if they extinguish the fire on the Mizbeach? That's an Issur D'oraisa. The Torah says, Lo tichbeh. You may not extinguish the fire of the Mizbeach. Now comes the question, when you've removed fire from the Mizbeach, and you've taken it off the Mizbeach, to do something else with it, does it still have the same status as the fire on the Mizbeach, or is this a different fire? And one of the tests would be, is it also governed by the prohibition of extinguishing? Is what we need to look at. So what the Gemara would be looking at is which dimension changes when you take the fire off the Mizbeach? Of the six dimensions, which change? Intention could be one of them. What else could change? Tahor would be the same. So Kohen is Tahor. So there's no Tumah. Time, let's say it's in the same time period. Those take place in the morning or the afternoon or whenever.
The wood will eventually get burnt up.
The wood, but the most important, what is the dimension that changes? Sorry? Moving it. So one of the space changes. You're moving it from one place to another. The Mizbeach is one definition of space, and you're taking it off the Mizbeach. Does it change status when you do that? When you move something from the Mizbeach, particularly fire, when you move fire from the Mizbeach, and by the way, we're not talking about the fire itself has no status, it's not an object. It has to be attached to the coal. Unless the fire is attached to the coal, there's nothing to discuss. So you take the burning coals with the fire off the Mizbeach and you move them to another area, so you've changed its position. Can you think of things that change their status by changing their place? Sorry? How do you mean?
Put it on the wrong side, so it's a
No, it's still a mezuzah. It's just not your door doesn't have a mezuzah, but it's a mezuzah, so it doesn't change by moving it. Where does the object change by moving its space? Well, the best would be probably is carrying on Shabbos. Right? To take something, to move something from a Rishus HaYachid into a Rishus HaRabim, or from a Rishus HaRabim to a Rishus HaYachid would be one example. Can you think of a non-halachic example where changing place changes the reality of the object? put a roof on a house. It doesn't do anything. So that would be an example where it converts the structure into a house. That would be an example. Another example would be if you take... Sorry? But that's not because of the place. That's really because of the temperature change. But you're right. That would cause it to change. A simple example would be you take a chair out of the Museum of Modern Art on exhibit and you put it onto a junk heap. What is the chair now? It's a piece of junk. It instantly becomes a piece of junk. If it's positioning. Where you put it, you take a chair out of your house. You put a chair in your house, it's a piece of furniture. You take the chair and you put it out. In America, you can put your furniture out on the pavement and then it disappears very quickly, not because people steal it. Like, yeah, it disappears even if it's in your house. But there it disappears if you put it outside your house because you're giving people permission to come and take it away and people want to use it. But so if you take the chair from in your house, it's a piece of furniture. You take the same chair and you put it outside, it's a different object. It's no longer a piece of furniture, it's a piece of junk. As far as you're concerned, for somebody else, can come by and take it. So you, the place that the thing is in, the three dimensions change something not only by changing its dimensions, but also by changing the position in which it is. And we should become sensitive to that kind of thing. When you, even in day-to-day life, it becomes really important when you want to position something. If you have an aesthetic sense, where you put a vase of flowers, put it there, and you look at it, and it's not quite right, and you put it somewhere else, where you hang a picture, where you place something. If we become aware of this, that space changes the reality, then you start becoming sensitive to position, and that you're able to change a room completely by where you position the furniture, even if it's the same furniture. You move it around, the whole atmosphere of the room changes all of a sudden. What's changed? Simply the positions in which you put things. So we need to appreciate that just as you can change something by giving it a new coat of paint, or you can change something by altering it in some way or another. You can change something by changing the position in which it resides. So in the case of the Beis HaMikdash, we're talking now about taking coals off of the Mizbeach. When the coals are on the Mizbeach, there is a certain halachic status to those coals. The halachic status is manifest in the fact that extinguishing them is a serious offense. What happens when you move them off? So now they're no longer coals of the Mizbeach. Or are they? So what is the question really?
They would be surely, because I mean, on the Mizbeach they possess a certain kedusha.
Right.
So you take it off, and if you're going to use it for the ketores, it retains that kedusha.
Okay, so great. So you're saying, one second, you say it depends what you're taking it off for. So you're saying now look at intention, not just space. Look at the fifth dimension. It's all very well. The time is the same. The three dimensions change, but that shouldn't be what determines it. What should determine it is why you're taking it off the Mizbeach. Are you taking it off to continue using for a mitzvah, in which case it retains its kedusha, or are you just taking it off because you're taking it off? So those are some of the things we're going to look at over here. So the question of whether the fire retains its status or not, the real question is, what makes it a Shamizbeach? Is it the fact that it was lit on, it was part of the Mizbeach, and it remains Mizbeach fire until it's extinguished, and you're not allowed to extinguish it? Or is it Mizbeach fire as long as it's on the Mizbeach? And if you remove it from the Mizbeach, it's no longer Mizbeach fire. That's what we have to decide. So, the Gemara says, Eish machta o menorah, the fire used for machta o menorah, for the Yom Kippur incense, or for the menorah, Abaya amar chayev. Abaya says it's the same, it's still Mizbeach fire, and you're chayev. Rava amar potter, Rava says it's not. You're no longer chayev for it. Why are we talking about specifically fire that's used for the Yom Kippur? What about fire that's used for the everyday turret? So that you really began to answer here, Shimon, because if it's going to be used for the everyday turret, then where does it go? Where does it go from the Mizbeach? To the little Mizbeach, to the inside Mizbeach. So it's still called Mizbeach fire. It's just being transferred from one Mizbeach to another, but it's Mizbeach fire all the way. But on Yom Kippur, it's not going to see a Mizbeach again. When you take it off the Mizbeach, that's it. It's not going back onto any other Mizbeach. And therefore, maybe on Yom Kippur, it's no longer called Mizbeach fire. What about the fire you're going to light the menorah with? That's no longer called Mizbeach fire. You've taken it off the Mizbeach. It's not going back onto any Mizbeach. It's going to the menorah. And therefore, it's not called Mizbeach fire. So, Therefore, Abaya says, in such a case where it's no longer a mizbeach fire, you are chayev. Rava says you're patur. Then the Gemara goes on to a little bit of an analysis, which we'll just run through before we discuss it in more detail. The kabye b'rosho shel mizbeach, if you actually extinguished the fire on top of the mizbeach, you took a piece of fire, and while you were still on top of the area of the mizbeach, you extinguished it. Everybody agrees. Abaya and Rava, you're chayev. That's a no-go. That you can't do. It's clearly mizbeach fire. Even if you've separated it from the main pile of wood, if it's in the mizbeach space, it's mizbeach fire. That's for sure. Ki pligid de'achtei a'ara. The question is, once you've taken it off the mizbeach, back onto the ground, and you've got it there, the chabiyeh, and that's where you extinguish it. Abaya amar chayev. Abaya says you're chayev. Eisha mizbeach. It's still Eisha mizbeach. Doesn't matter where it is. It comes from the mizbeach. It is part of the mizbeach. It's Eisha mizbeach. Rava amar patu. Rava says patu. Kivan de nitka, nitka. Once it's been separated, it has been separated. So it's a really interesting idea as to whether the fire retains its kedusha as long as it's attached to the mizbeach, or once it gets its kedusha, does it retain it even if it's no longer attached to the mizbeach? That's what really becomes what comes important. So if one wants to get a bit kabbalistic and compare it to a human being, so because we also like fire, aren't we? That's why for a yahrzeit we use candlelight, because a human soul is also fire. So we could look at it in various different Kabbalistic senses. Where do our neshamas come from? From Hashem. So kivan de nitzka nitzka, but they become somewhat separated. We come down to the earth. What happens to does our neshama still have kedusha even though it's separate from Hashem? Hashem. Well, firstly, it goes back to Hashem, so it's like the mizbeach apnimi. It's destined to go back. And secondly, there is still a connection. There is still a connection. The question is, what happens if a soul really becomes disconnected? What's that called in the Torah? Kares. That's what kares is. No, there's a disconnection. So now does the soul still have kedusha?
No.
It's lost its kedusha. Kivan de nitzka nitzka. It no longer has kedusha. It's been separated from its source. Do we say that its kedusha is dependent on continuing attachment? Or does the neshama retain its kedusha, just like the fire does, even if it's no longer attached? There's some interesting Kabbalistic parallels that one could have. We're sitting in a Beis HaMedrash. We're sitting in a shul. So we're attached. It's like we're at a Mizbeach. We're in a little Beis HaMikdash, learning Torah. So our souls are attached to the Torah. What happens when we walk out of the door? Is it Kivan de Nitka Nitka or not? So it depends whether we attach. So that's why we like not to detach ourselves. Why is it that when we say the brocha, what happens if you say a brocha for a mitzvah, and then you take your mind off the mitzvah? You say a brocha on a talis, and your talis falls off. What happens then when you want to put your talis back on again? You have to make another brocha because there's been hesach hadash, your mind's been detached. In the morning we say birkas haTorah, don't we? We say a brocha for the Torah. And if we only start, let's say we said the brocha for the Torah this morning, and now we're learning in the evening. Let's say there were among us people who are not tzaddikim. I know none of us took our minds off the Torah from the time we said the bracha this morning until tonight. But assuming there were a person, imagine such a person who for a few moments during the day didn't have his mind on the Torah. Wouldn't he have to say the bracha again? But he doesn't. Why not? Because we try not to be detached. That's why we're supposed to think the whole day, everything we're doing. What's the halacha? What am I meant to be doing now? What's the right thing to be doing now? As long as you're thinking that, you're thinking Torah. So the way a Jew lives is thinking of Torah all the time. It's not kivan de nitzka nitzka. We don't want to be detached. So even when we leave the Torah and we walk out of that door, we're not detaching ourselves from the source of the Torah. So there's quite an aesthetic picture. If you look at this poetically, this whole idea of fire coming off the mizbeach, and what is its status, and is it still attached or isn't it attached? If you look at it poetically and artistically, it's a beautiful image of the movement of a soul from its source, and at what point it still retains its kedusha, and how far can that be? Now, Tosfos asks an interesting question. But in order to understand Tosfos' question, we need to look at another Mishnah, and small piece of Gemara. The Mishnah is a few pages earlier, Mem Gimel Amud Bet. Top right hand corner. Mem Gimel Amud Bet. Page 86 in the English. Okay. So if you look in the Mishnah, you'll see the Mishnah starts in the middle of the page. And the Mishnah records some of the differences between the daily service and the Yom Kippur service. And if you start about 8 lines down from the beginning of the Mishnah, it says 7 lines, something like that. B'chol yom haya choteh b'shel kesef u'mareh b'toch shel zahav. You got that right? So you've got the Mishnah in the middle of Mem Gimel Amud Bet, about 6 lines from the top of the Mishnah. Every day, he used to take the pan and dig up the coals using a silver pan, and then he would pour the coals, the burning coals, out of the silver one into a gold one, and he would take the gold one to the Mizbeach HaPnimi, to the indoor, to the inside Mizbeach, and there he would bring the incense offering. Not so in Yom Kippur, though. He used the golden pan to pick up the coals, and he took that very golden pan into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He didn't pour from one to the other. Every day, the pan he uses to lift the coals up can contain 4 kav, that's a measurement, and he pours it in into the gold pan that holds 3 kav. So that way he makes sure that the second pan is completely full. Because when you're picking up coals from the fireplace, you don't fill the pan, it doesn't get full. So if he were using the same pan every day, it wouldn't actually get full. So he uses a larger pan, and although it's not full, he then pours from the larger to the smaller one, fills the smaller one, because fullness is a very important concept in halacha. Fullness is as important as size. Where do we have examples of that? Kiddush, kosher bracha. There is a certain minimum size, but even if you've got a big glass, it doesn't help having it half full. What's important is the ratio of content to container. The ratio of content to container needs to be matched. It's the same with human beings. When the container is much bigger than the content, then what do we say? Empty barrels make a lot of noise, isn't that so? That's when you've got big ego. When the content is, when the content needs to be at least as big as the container. It's not what's important is not how big. What's important is to what extent it's matched. So here we want the container that he takes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to be full. In order to make it full, he's got to use a bigger container to lift the ash up, which he does. He uses the 4. Now, what does he do with the leftover ash? Because now he's going to have coals. Now he's got a problem. It's left over in the silver pan. What did he do with them? Now, and he's taken them off the Mizbeach already. Taken them off the Mizbeach, put them in the gold pan, and now there's a whole lot of, might be as much as almost a cov of ashes of coals burning that he's now got to dispose of. What does he do? So if you turn the next page, these Gemaras make him keep it quite exciting. What did he do? If you look in the middle of this, just below the middle of the next Amud, which is the next up, which is Mem Dalad Amud Bet, B'chol Yom B'shel Arbat Kavin, it quotes from the Mishnah, every day there are 2 dots, and then it quotes from the Mishnah, every day he uses a container of 4 Kavin, Tana, we learned, Nitpazru lo Kav Gechalin, Mechabdam La'ama. If there's a spillage of up to a Kav of coals, he sweeps them up into the Amma. And the Amma, according to most, is a canal of water that used to flow through the Beis HaMikdash and go out to Mei Shiloach. So what did he land up doing? He lands up extinguishing coals that have come off the Mizbeach. Says Tosfos, how can that be possible? We've just said that there's a whole machlokes, but certainly there's some kind of kedusha still to them, and the principle of Lord Tichbe still applies. How can you throw that into the river? The first was asked his question on our page, on Memvo Vomit Beis. Sorry? Well, we'll see. You're right. Tosfos deals with intention. If you look at that last Tosfot on Memvo Vomit Beis, Keep Ligid the Achta A'ara V'chabye Abaya Omer Chayev, Abaya says Chayev, Hikshe Rabbeinu Simcha. Rabbeinu Simcha asked, "The Amar Leel, We've learned earlier on Daf Mem Dalad Amud Bet, Mitpazer Hemena Kav Gechalim, that if a kav of coals spill out of the pouring process, Mechabdan Lama. Ufirish Rashi, and Rashi explained, La'amat Hamayim Sheba Azorah. That's the canal of water in the Azorah, in the courtyard. Kasher La'abaya. And that's a problem for Abaya. Tosfos goes on and gives a couple of different explanations. The one on the next line, at the beginning of the next line, or let's say to the end of that same line, V'li nira de lo kasha, and I believe that this is not such a severe question. De lo mechayev, the reason you're not chayev, the reason this is not an isur, is mishum de kivan de bemit kaven chote b'shel dalet kavin u'ma'are l'shel gimel kavin v'nit pazer mehem kav. His intention was to pick up four. His intention was to pour out three. He knew he would be left with up to one. That was all programmed in. Umashin it's pazere, Noah made loss fun. He never had any intention to use the fourth kav. So it's not as if he took it for usage and didn't land up using it. He knew there would be a kav of wastage in order to fill the second container. And therefore, afilu abaya mode, even abaya will agree. Kivan de intik. This is a case of intik. Intik means it's been separated, it's been cut off, it's been disconnected. And what is the disconnection here? It is disconnected by virtue of the fact that his intention was, when he took it off, he was taking off. It's difficult to understand. What does this mean? How does it work? His intention was to take it off. Well, anybody's intention is if you just take off a pile of ashes from the mizbeach with the intention of throwing them on the floor, does that make it okay? That wouldn't make it okay. What's so special about his intention?
And he doesn't know which one.
And he doesn't exactly. He doesn't know. You can't define which kav is which. Difficult to understand what Tosfos means. If you look back, however, on Mem Dalad Amud Bet, those of you who've got Tosfos Yeshanim on the side, it's probably in very small print. Tosfos Yeshanim at the bottom, four lines from the bottom, asks the same question. And he gives a couple of answers also, but at the end he brings an answer in the name of Harav Reb Elchanan. Kivan shena aset kol mitzvatan ein bahen od klal isur lo tichbe. Since they were used for a mitzvah and the mitzvah has been completed, there is no longer a lo tichbe. So what is he introducing us to? He's saying now, if you take fire off, and the intention is to use the fire for another mitzvah, if it's to use it on another mizbeach, then everybody says there's no problem. Not there's no problem. There is a problem. It's still mizbeach fire. If you're using it for no mitzvah at all, it's not mizbeach fire. What happens if you're using it for another mitzvah? What is the din then? So what's happened with the first one? If you look further in our Gemara, I know we're skipping backwards and forwards a little bit, but if you look further in our Gemara and Daf Mem Vav Amud Bet, the fourth last thin line of Gemara, Elohad Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Baravua, this which Rav Nachman said in the name of Rabba Baravua, Hamorid Gachelet Me'al Gabi HaMizbeach, the Kiba Chayef. If you take a coal off the mizbeach and you extinguish it, you're chayev. Kaman ka'abaya. Surely that is like abaya who says it's also, you're not allowed to do it. Afilu tema karavan. Kaman says no, it could even be rava. Hatam lo intik lemitzvata, hacha intik lemitzvata. If you take a coal off, where does rava say you're potur? Is if you've already removed the coal from the mizbeach to use on another mitzvah. And as who was it said, the one mitzvah ends, the one mitzvah begins means the other mitzvah ends. So by dedicating the coals to a new mitzvah, you've removed it from mizbeach fire. So what dimension is doing that? The dimension of intention. Yes, it's true that I've moved the coal into a different space, but I've also moved it into different intention. If I've moved it into different intention, there Rava says it's no longer mizbeach fire. If it's no longer mizbeach fire, the laws of the mizbeach do not apply to it, and I may extinguish it. Or at least, if I extinguished it, I'm not chayev. Whereas Abaya says it remains mizbeach fire, even though it's applied to another place.
Excuse me. Didn't the Kohen have to remove the ashes from the sprout every morning.
Yeah, that's the, you're right. But by that they were kind of extinguished already. Those are the ashes of us.
But I mean, the ashes also had some residual condition.
No, not really. There was something there that in that you had to still do an avodah with them.
Outside.
Right.
Once it was outside, presumably then it
right.
was
right. Right. Right.
But it had to be taken outside. So
yes.
That, during that process, still retained something of its original, intention of
yes.
to make.
Yes. Certainly while it's on the Mizbech.
So how could then the excess cover of coals sweep
it to the river? So that Tosfos is a big question. What happens to the Kedusha where did the Kedusha go? What happens to the Kedusha? So Tosfos Yishonim says this, Rabbeinu Yochanan's answer is that since you've taken all four kav to do a new mitzvah with it, it's true that one of the four kav isn't going to get to the new mitzvah. But you need all the four to do the new mitzvah. Even the wastage is needed for the mitzvah.
But surely, at least you should allow it to burn out and then take it outside the camp for the rest of the ashes.
You don't even need to appear. You don't even need to. Why? Because it's no longer Mizbeach fire. What took it off from being Mizbeach fire? Not the fact that you removed it from the Mizbeach space. That wouldn't be sufficient. It's that you moved it from the Mizbeach intention. The dimension of intention changes when you allocate it to a new mitzvah. So by allocating it to the new mitzvah, it's removed from the old mitzvah. And it retains no longer none of its earlier Kedusha, it retains a new Kedusha. But the new Kedusha is not governed by the laws of extinguishing. And that's how the Tosfos Yishonim answers Tosfos' question. That that what's important here is, and it becomes much easier, that was the reason for my introduction with the different dimensions. If you look at it, otherwise it becomes very confusing, but if you understand that there are, in the Beis HaMikdash, there are six different dimensions we deal with, and sometimes just by examining a law, examining a halacha from a new dimension, you begin to understand, you begin to see exactly where it's going. Now there's a little Tosfos Yishonim on our page, which is very intriguing. And Tosfos Yishonim says the following. He asks from a Gemara in Zevachim, from a Mishnah in Zevachim. It's also Arav Rabbeinu Elchonon, the same person. Hiksha Arav Rabbeinu Elchonon mehad itznan beferik ha-mizbeach mikdash, ha-mizbeach mekadesh, kachelet shepeka'a me'al ha-mizbeach, lo yachzir. If a coal shoots off the Mizbeach, you've seen fire in the fireplace, sometimes a spark, a little amber or something, gets shot out. So you're standing there and a coal shoots over the Mizbeach. What do you do with it? You're the kohen on duty, and there's a out of the Mizbeach comes a coal. What do you do? Do you have to put it back? Yeah, do you have to put it back? So the Mishnah says lo yachzir. You don't put it back on the fire. Says Rabbeinu Yochanan, v'kivan de lo yachzir nishlama mitzvata. Therefore, you must assume if you don't have to put the coal back on the mizbeach, its mitzvah is complete. It's done what it was designed to do in this world. It doesn't have any more work to do in the world. Its life is over. That's what it would seem to be. That's why you don't have to put it back again. In that case, asks Rabbeinu Elchanan, the Eich Chayev Mishum Mechade. So why would you be Chayev for extinguishing it? It doesn't have a role in the Mizbeach anymore. It's clearly not Eish Mizbeach. If you had to put it back onto the Mizbeach, it would be Eish Mizbeach. But you don't have to put it back onto Eish Mizbeach. So it's not an Eish Mizbeach. If it's not an Eish Mizbeach, why can't you extinguish it? Asks Rabbeinu Elchanan. An interesting question. What's the difference? Yeah, what would be the difference? No, there's no question that you could leave it. The question is, can you extinguish it? And Rabbeinu Elchanan is assuming you cannot extinguish it because we've just learned that this is our very Gemara. That in Eish, a fire that has been removed from the at least according to Abaya, you're chayev if you extinguish it. So it certainly still has its kedusha. If it has its kedusha, why lo yatsu? Why don't you put it back? If it's Eish Mizbeach, then it belongs on the Mizbeach, you should have to put it back.
What is he higher for not putting
it? No, that's not the problem. The problem is, if he extinguished it, instead of putting it... No, he shouldn't put it back. The Mishnah says he shouldn't put it back. The question is, if he extinguishes... We see in our Gemara that if you extinguish a coal that has been taken off the Mizbeach, according to Abaye, you're chayav. And according to Rava, you're not chayav, but according to most Rishonim, it's still also, even according to Rava, you're not allowed to do it. Ask Rabbeinu Simcha, why? The Mishnah says in Zvachim that you don't have to put the fire back onto the Mizbeach. If you don't have to put it back, then it isn't Mizbeach fire.
Does the definition of what, how much on the Mizbeach, in other words, if one small tiny part of the whole lot comes off, which constitutes a hundredth or something like that, it's still to each and every little piece?
As long as it's actually an amber, if it's just a spark, it wouldn't apply. But if there's a physical object, no matter how small, then it would apply. Rabbeinu Simcha answers, Rabbeinu Elchanan answers, V'yesh lomar, sheyesh chiluk, this is close to what you were suggesting, Chai, sheyesh chiluk ben peka'a me'al ha-mizbeach lohorida. There is a difference between a piece that is expelled from the mizbeach and one that has been removed from the mizbeach. What is the difference?
Intention.
So in the case of removal, there's intention. And therefore, but what happens, the intention doesn't help, but it actually works against us here, because we're saying, where a human being removed it, it remains Mizbeach fire. No matter what his intention was, unless he applied it to another mitzvah. But if he didn't apply it to another mitzvah, he just took it off from Mizbeach and put it on the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, then it retains its Mizbeach status. But if it shoots out of the Mizbeach by itself, it loses its Mizbeach status. It should be the other way around, if anything. Why would it be that way around? What would be the understanding of it? Yeah, but your kavana was to take it off the fire, off the Mizbeach. But that kavana doesn't help. Still Mizbeach fire. But then you should have to put it back. The logic is the other way around. The logic is that this should be more part of the Mizbeach than if you take it out, than if a human being consciously takes it out. What does Rabbeinu Elchanan mean that if it was shot out by the fire, it's out, and if it wasn't, then it wasn't? So here you better think in a different frame altogether. If it's shot out, then you can say, Pashut. Nobody chose to do it, it's Pashut. The Mizbeach doesn't want this piece of wood in it. Hashem doesn't want it, but for whatever reason. It wasn't a human choice. But when there's human choice, you can't say Bashir. I know that that's not always the popular view. People like to think that everything is Bashir. But it isn't. It isn't. Situations are Bashir, and there are conditions as to what is and what isn't Bashir, at least according to the Rambam. And here we have an example of it, that to say it's Bashir, this fire, then it's Bashir. Nobody chose to do it. But if a human being interferes, that interference is null and void. A human being can't override the Kedusha of a Mizbeach and take something off and say this is no longer part of the Kedusha of a Mizbeach, unless he applies it to a new mitzvah. But just by removing it into a different space, that isn't going to take the Kedusha away. But if it's shot out of the Mizbeach by itself, by natural forces, and you say, it's shot out. No, you don't have to put it back. You took it off, you've got to put it back. But if it happened by itself, you don't have to. And we have those principles even with common courtesy, isn't that? So if you walk into a room and the door is closed, and you open the door, what do? You close it behind you. You leave the door the same way as you found it. You walk into a room, the lights are off. You do something in the room. When you finish in the room, what do? You switch off the lights again. You leave it as you found it. But if it happens supernaturally, you don't interfere. The lights go on. You don't have to go and turn them off again. You can say that's Bashir, whatever it is. You don't have to interfere with nature. But human choice trying to interfere with nature, we have to reverse. So if global warming is caused by human carelessness, do we have an obligation to reverse it? Yes. If the sun's busy burning out and it's going to be gone in 600 billion years' time, then do we have to start looking for a replacement? No, that's natural. We don't have to interfere with it. When nature's running its course, we leave nature to run its course. But when human beings have done something, we have to repair what we did. It's part of what we have. If we interfere, we have to repair the interference. It's the same in interpersonal relationships. If we do something, we've got to repair the interference. When nature's taking its course, people are aging, you don't have to reverse their aging process. But if you do something, I understand. But if you do something to accelerate somebody's aging process, then you need to do something to reverse it again. You need to uplift them and to do something to improve them a little bit. So that's today's this week's piece of Gemara that just gives us some insights into different elements of forces that apply and halakhas that work in the Beis HaMikdash, and some of the complexity of those halakhas. It's all very well saying that we want Mashiach to come and so on, and that's great, but when Mashiach comes, we're going to have to, at least the Kohanim, we're going to have to know these things as well as we know Hilchos Shabbos. These are going to be everyday halakhas for them. These are going to be everyday laws for them. They need to know and master. This will be the Beis HaMikdash is the only part of Jewish life where there's ritual, where there's an enormous amount of activity that we don't understand, but that is governed. It's true that we don't understand the philosophy of Kodshim, but the mathematical precision of all the halachas and how they interlink with each other is just beyond comprehension. How magnificent it is and how beautiful it is in the linkages and super linkages that apply to the laws of Kodshim. I'm actually not sure what they're in the Nazca. I might actually give the measurements what they are in what it is in volume, what a kav is exactly. Does it, oh, you brought the wrong one, so we don't have Nazca here. But we can try and check exactly what they are. But it was quite heavy, which was part of the reason why on Yom Kippur he didn't have two separate things, so as to lighten the load on Yom Kippur. He was fasting and he had a lot of work to do. There are a lot of examples in this Perek of shortcuts that they allowed the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. You would think on Yom Kippur they added. On Yom Kippur they gave a lot of shortcuts to him, both physically, that he to walk from one place to another, to take shorter routes than one would normally take, to use one utensil instead of pouring from one into the other, to use one with a longer handle so that he could support it with his other hand, not just a short handle that he would have to use his wrist for, one that he could actually use his arm and support his arm. All sorts of amazing considerations for the Kohen Gadol to make his Yom Kippur service a little bit easier for him to bear.